Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. How are you?
All right. Can you hear me good?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Are you ready to get started?
Yes.
Okay. This is Tanya Evans, and I am interviewing Malcolm R. Foster, who was a buck sergeant in the 310th Air Commando Squadron in Vietnam from 1967 to 1968. Thank you for letting me interview you, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I think we'll have a good time talking about this because I'm very interested in it, and we've really never gotten to talk much about it before.
Okay.
So I just want you to just tell me whatever you want to tell me, as much or as little as you want to tell me, and we'll just kind of take it from there. So why don't you start with telling me why you decided to go talk to a recruiter and enlist?
I had already been talking to a recruiter, and then whenever I got my draft papers and all, I went back and talked to the recruiter and told him that I had received my draft papers. And he said, that didn't matter. He said, we can go ahead and put you in the Air Force if that's what you want to do. And I told him I did. Mm-hmm. So that's what I done in September of 65.
Oh, okay. And so then once you did that, then you got ready and went to basic training and everything? Is that how that worked?
Right, we went through basic training and all, and then I had to go through tech schools and all and learn the job that they had assigned me to, which was aircraft mechanics. Had to learn all about different kind of recip aircraft. I wasn't on jets, I was on recips, which is a propeller type. Not turboprop, but just regular propeller type airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the schools and all and learned all that, and then I went down to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida and got some on-the-job training down there, working on planes on the flight line and all, and phase docks and inspections and all. That's what I was mainly doing, was inspections on the aircraft and all. When they come in, they had to be inspected every so many hours and all, flying time. So mm-hmm. That's what I was doing. And then I went to, Lackland Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I had a lot of my basic training and all. And then I went to Wichita Falls to the air base up there, and that's where I had some more schooling before I went to Eglin. I'm sorry, I got a little ahead of myself there.
That's okay.
But that's where I had all my schooling and all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got orders to go to Vietnam. And they sent us to the Philippine Islands for 3 months training before we went into Vietnam, telling us all the different things that could happen to you over there and the kind of diseases and all to be looking out for, and just a whole bunch of stuff like that before we even went into Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. So that's where you went first.
Right. On my way
to Vietnam. And how long did you say you were there in the Philippines?
It was about a 3 month school there.
Okay. So you knew basically when you got in that you were going to Vietnam.
Right, because I went in when they had the big Vietnam buildup. When the
mm-hmm.
first everything was just starting then, and that's when they started recruiting everybody to go into service and different branches and all. And so I knew exactly where I was headed.
Mm-hmm.
Over the long
and you were okay with that at the time.
Right.
So how had things been presented to you at that time? How had things been presented that made you think, okay, you know, I'm willing to do this. I want to do this.
Well, that's what everybody had to do in the service. So you don't have a choice of what you want to do or what you don't want to do. You have to do what they tell you to do, and they send you where they need you. So that's what mainly everybody knew, that when they went into service at that period of time, at one time or another, you was going to end up in Vietnam for a tour of duty.
But do you think that most people seem to be okay with that at the time, as opposed to, you know, like later on when people weren't wanting to go over there Do you think people were more ready to go over there and fight more at the time that you went?
At the time I went, that's what they were doing. But right after that's when they had all these people that start protesting and all these peace rallies and all this kind of stuff. All that kind of stuff started coming out right after I got over there.
Uh-huh.
And so that started changing everything over there as far as the way you were looking at things. At first you thought you was going into a war zone, which you were in a war zone. There was fighting and killing and all this. But it gradually turned into a more of a political war than it did a war like the World War II or World War I or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. But, so your opinion really changed from the time you got there until the time you left?
Right. Because I was ready to go home after I found out it's more of a political war and everybody's getting killed for no reason and all. I was ready to go home. Get out from over there before I got killed. Which I had some friends that got killed over there the second day he was over there. But he went over there after I did. And I had some more friends that I met over there that was from my hometown and everything. And they all made it back, but just that one, he didn't make it that I know of. There's probably some more that I don't know of that got killed or anything, but I wanted to look when we went to Washington to view the wall and all. I wanted to take time and go through the book and look for different names and all that I might know, but we didn't have time, and there's a big list of names.
Right.
So I just found the one that I knew that got killed and got a copy of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell me, like, you know, I've never been to anywhere in Asia. So what, when you first landed, well, you went to the Philippines first.
Right.
Then where did you fly into Vietnam from the Philippines?
Well, when I landed in the Philippines, there's a lot of jungle and all, too. It's all overgrowth was like jungle world. And then when I got into Vietnam, it was the same way. I went into Nha Trang first.
Okay.
And we were basically building the base there. The housing and all that we were staying in, the Quonset huts and all this kind of stuff that we were working in. We had to do all that while we were there. After we got off from doing our regular job, we went and done that.
Oh, okay.
And then whenever I went to Phan Rang, which was north of Nha Trang, we did the same thing up there. We had to build all of our housing, our sleeping quarters, our bathrooms and showers. We had to do all of that because they didn't have anything. They were using the country's airports that they had. We were using sharing the runways with them till they could get our own built, which everything was right next to each other. We lived on one side of the base, and they lived on the other side, flight line. So
you were sharing basically your living area with the Vietnamese.
No, we were sharing the runways of the airport with the Vietnamese airports, and the military were using the same runways till we could get our own build. But we were on one side of the runways, and they were on the other side of the runways.
Okay.
The airports and all. Okay, gotcha.
So what was your impression? Did you have any interaction with them or very much interaction with them?
The only action I had with them, interaction or anything, was the ones that was working on the base in the different little shops and all that we had, barber shops and clothing stores, stuff like that, and then the ones that cleaned up in the all the offices and the barracks and all, they would come in and clean up everything up.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only people that I really got to even see or try to talk to or anything. They could understand a little bit, but they couldn't understand a whole lot.
More
of it was.
And did they seem happy that you...
Hand signals and stuff like that than anything else.
Right. And did they seem glad that you all were there, or not so much?
They did at first when we were first getting in there and all. And then they raided the bases one night, and it just so happens that one of them that got killed in the raid, one of the Vietnamese, he was a barber on the base.
Oh,
so he'd been giving
okay.
you haircuts and shaving you and everything. It wouldn't have been nothing for him to just go ahead and slice your throat right then.
Holy cow. So did you found that out afterwards,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, when they said that he had got killed in the raid one night on the base.
So did that make you more nervous about the other people working there?
Any of them working around there could key at any time. You just didn't ever know.
Right.
Because they were coming in, putting hand grenades in the gas tanks, hand grenades in buildings and all. They wouldn't go off sometimes, but you would find them later on.
Mm-hmm.
So you really had to watch what you was moving around and stuff, because it might have been a landmine or something. You never know.
So you were kind of always on guard, or
right,
basically with everything you did.
Right. You watch what you was doing and where you was going and who was around you and all that.
So what else was at the base? So you said there was a barber shop, and what all kinds of things?
Well, when we finally got everything built, the USO had a building there where you could go play cards, relax, they'd play music. They had some of the USO ladies and all working in there. You could talk to them. You had airmen's clubs and all where you could go and have a drink in the afternoon after you got off of work, or go eat supper or whatever you want to do. But they had officers clubs and airmen's clubs, and then they had BXs and all where you could go buy everything that you needed, your toiletry items and soaps and all that kind of stuff. Deodorants.
Wow, so basically like a little small town all its
right.
own.
You had just about anything you wanted to do on the bases.
Mm-hmm. So you never went into any of the cities?
No, I never left the bases while I was over there. Most of it, they wouldn't let us leave the bases because of all the trouble that was happening at the time that we got over there. And they didn't mm-hmm. want anybody getting killed downtown, just or anything like that. So that's the reason everybody stayed on the bases. Mm-hmm. But I was in the Air Force or Army and all. They was in the villages and all that. So you could hear all kind of stories every once in a while. They had some of the Army Special Forces camps in and around inside the air bases and all. And you could talk with them, and they would tell you things about what was going on and what to be looking for and that kind of stuff, too. So it was real close. I mean, everybody worked together on a lot of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We even had some people from
Australia
and Aussies and all is what we call them. They were somebody that you didn't want to mess with at all. They were showing up bad. And when they went out into the jungles and all, they didn't mess with them too much.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. But there was a bunch of different people like that on the bases. I mean, they was from all different countries and all that was in there with us trying to control what the Vietnamese and North Vietnam was doing to the South Vietnam. And,
mm-hmm.
well, there was French people there. There were some Russians all around, too, but they didn't have too much to do with anybody.
So you met people from
right.
all over. So what were, can you tell me about like where you lived specifically? And
well, they were open bay barracks. They had like two floors to them. You might have anywhere from 50 to 75 people living on a floor. And you would have your bunk beds. There'd be two people in each little cubicle-like thing. But they was all open air. I mean, you could see all the way down to the other end, and you hear what's going down on the other end. But there'd be two people to a cubicle, and they'd have two lockers. And that was your wall between the next two. All the way down.
Oh, okay.
On both sides was that way.
Mm-hmm.
The showers and all was outside in another building. You had to go outside and into another building to take showers and baths and all. So.
And then how was your eating while you were over there?
Chow hall that we went to eat at.
Uh-huh.
We went in different times. You would go till everybody on the base got to eat. I mean, everybody couldn't go at one time because there wouldn't be enough room. So you went in stages, like.
And you just ate, I mean, they just cooked normal American food there?
Right, most of the time.
No Vietnamese food?
they would,
Did you ever try any while you were there?
Not in Vietnam, I didn't. The women and all, when they were cleaning up the barracks, they'd bring eggs, and they would bury them in the ground around, and they'd let them stay there for two or three, 4 days, a week or sometime. Then they would get them out and eat them. They called them blokes.
And you never tried one, huh?
I can't even eat a raw egg. Mine's got to be scrambled. I mean, I can't stand to see how people can eat a raw egg.
Well, tell me, like, what did your days look like with your normal job? Not, I mean, I know you had to do the other stuff too, but like your normal job that you received training to do, what did your days look like?
Well, we'd get up in the morning. And we'd go eat breakfast and all. And then we'd go to our job sites, wherever they might be. And mine was inspecting airplanes. Our airplanes, the 310th Air Commando Squadron, was in charge of the planes that were delivering cargo to all these out-of-the-way remote places, dropping. Sometimes they could land up on top of the mountains. And they finally started putting a little J-97 jet engines on them so they could get a better takeoff and landing on the planes in the mountains and all, because the runways would be real short, and you'd have to have a lot of speed to get off the ground and to slow down when you come in. But that was our job as the 310th Air Commando Squadron. We had a sister flight, the 309th, which was the ones that sprayed the defoliation, Agent Orange and all over there. That was our sister flight. That's what they done. But we had to inspect our planes and keep them up to date, repair them, anything that went wrong with them, we had to fix it. We had to.
So that's what you did till... Like until, was it kind of like a normal work day? Like until 5 o'clock or?
You may have
4 o'clock or?
Two airplanes in a hangar, and part of us would be working on one of them, part of us would be working on the other one. But we had to inspect them every so many hours. I forget the hours and all now that we had to inspect them. Plus if they had any damage done to them while they were out flying around, like gunshots or stuff like that, we'd have to bring them in, fix that, repair whatever damage it had done to the airplane. Sometimes you had to replace some parts on the motors and all where they'd got shot up. But there was nothing for the planes to be flying. They used the rivers and all over there as sort of like road maps. And while they were flying over the rivers and all, there'd be these sandpans be shooting at them all the time, all the way up and down the river. Going in the mountains, they'd be shooting at them. So there was always plenty to do. You never got through. We had probably about, I'm thinking there was 15 different planes for each squadron. The 310th and the 309th. And they parked them in sandbags, hangars and all. So there was always something to do.
Well, what about the, you know, there's sort of a stereotypical picture, I guess, of the guys in Vietnam doing a lot of drugs and that kind of thing. Did you see that going on?
I've seen some of it. It was mostly done by the people that was out in the jungles all the time. I mean, when they come in, you could tell they wasn't right. Something was wrong with them. And eventually you would figure out that they'd been on drugs or they were on drugs, taking this and that, getting it from out there in the jungle and all. So it was around.
Yeah, so that's what I was wondering. Where did they get the stuff? I mean, what kind of drugs was it that people were doing, and where
Most
did they get it?
It was marijuana, do you know? I think, at the time. And they was getting it from in the jungle, from the villagers and all. Anything that they wanted, they could get it from some of the villagers and all. Or when they would raid a village or something, they would find a bunch of it and they would get it. But they were
But it wasn't going on that much there on the base.
I didn't see it on the base except when some of those like army people came in. I mean, I didn't see it with a lot with Air Force. I couldn't really tell if it was Air Force was doing it that much or not, but I knew it was a lot of it around.
You said that the base was raided one night. Did that just happen once?
Several
while
nights
you were
there? They would come on and raid the bases, trying to blow up planes and helicopters and bunkers where the supplies and ammunition and all was stored. They were always trying to do away with that.
And so, did you actually see them when this happened, or were you sleeping?
Well, a lot of times it was when we were sleeping. A lot of times when we were sleeping, you'd hear all this gunfire start going off and fireworks like on the outside where they were exploding stuff. And a lot of times the sirens would go off and that would tell you to get to the bunkers, but sometimes you couldn't get in the bunkers. You'd have to just try to lay down on the floor up under the beds or whatever. So you did get a chance to get in the bunker, which were bunkers and all was always around the barracks. But if you were in the upstairs, you wouldn't be running down those stairs to get in a bunker if they were out there shooting at you. So you just stayed in the barracks and stayed down low and tried to avoid some of the gunfire.
So were you upstairs or downstairs in the barracks?
I was upstairs and downstairs. I had we moved around some, and a lot of us moved downstairs instead of staying upstairs. So we got, every once in a while, there'd be a plane that come in and have pork chops or chickens or something like that that they were dispersing around Vietnam, and we would often be allowed to get a case of them, and we'd take them back to the barracks and cook them. We made us little barbecue grills to cook on outside, and we'd get some of that meat and cook it and eat it. Instead of having to eat at the barracks,
probably tasted good,
all
dude.
The time, we fixed our own.
Did you carry a weapon while you were there? Did everybody carry a weapon?
Not on the base. Where I was working, did we have weapons? We had security police. It was always around close by. Ever so many meters, they would be posted around the base watching. And they would always be all over the base anyway. So we didn't have to really worry about toting a gun or nothing. Because you wouldn't be wanting to be working on an airplane, somebody accidentally drop a gun and shoot the plane, it blow up and stuff like that. So we did not have the guns. We were qualified to use them if we needed to, but we didn't tote them.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about, like, the leadership on your base there? Did you think that the leaders were respected, or did it seem kind of like a loose system, or...
The only ones that I really
what'd you think about that?
In contact with was the ones that I was working up under in the job that I was doing. As far as the base commander and stuff like that, I'd see him every once in a while, but I didn't have any contact with him. Most of those were guarded by the security police, so they wouldn't get attacked or anything for any reason. They rode around in armored cars, trucks, whatever. Every once in a while, they'd have a meeting where you'd go to it, and they would be speaking or something like that. But as far as one-on-one contact with them, we didn't have that.
Did they? Did people seem to pretty much though respect them as much there as they would anywhere else, or did it seem kind of like everybody just kind of knew what their job was and did it, but didn't have a lot of respect for the
people
above
them? I mean, they were the ones that was in the know. We wasn't in the know. We were just the doers. So they knew what was going on, and they would pass it down the line through different channels and all, and you would eventually find out. But as far as one-on-one contact with any of them, no, it was not allowed, really. But they were the ones that was doing what they were supposed to be doing was okay.
So you think you were well prepared for your actual job by the time you got there from your training and everything ahead of time?
Yes. You went through training all the time. It was always something different they were showing you or teaching you how to do or what to do and how to do this. And if this happens, what to do. So you was in pretty well knowledgeable of what you were doing.
But you don't think you were really prepared for the, or maybe, and maybe there was no way to prepare you mentally, emotionally, or whatever for what you were going to experience. But you, did they do anything to try to prepare you in that way?
Not a whole lot at the time I went in, because they had so many people coming in that they couldn't really spend a lot of time. They were telling you what to do, showing you what to do. But as far as really pushing it on you, they was not doing that. You had to learn it yourself and do as I say do, not as I do, that kind of stuff.
And you talked about you mentioned the Agent Orange. Tell me about that. Did you all know that chemical was being used? I mean, what were you told about it, or were you told anything about it?
I didn't really know the name of it until later on. They just said that they were spraying defoliation, which would kill the leaves and all in the jungle so they could see what was going on the ground. As far as knowing it was Agent Orange at the time, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
That was
and
one of those
did,
need to know.
Well, and I guess at the
you knew what they were doing, but you didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know now that it's affecting a
and
lot
so,
of people's skin and different diseases and stuff that they are having now.
But you didn't have any effects from it.
Nothing I know of. I mean, they say that diabetes is caused from it. I've got diabetes. They say that emphysema is caused from it, which I've got emphysema. I've had heart problems. I've got hearing problems. I got sight problems. So I don't know what all was connected to it, what might have been affected by that. I know some of my hearing loss is due to working on the flight line with planes running up and being tested and jets being tested and all over the flight line. And the noise was just a squeal, and that would affect your hearing and all.
Mm-hmm. Did they provide you like with
a lot of times that didn't do a bit of good when the jet was running up next to you.
Right. And you were doing it for however many hours a day.
Most
right?
of the days it was probably about an 8-hour day. 8-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And you usually had three shifts. You had a first shift, a second shift, and a third shift.
And did you did you all rotate shifts?
2 weeks. You'd rotate to another shift and work that one for 2 weeks, and then rotate to the next shift and work it for 2 weeks. That way you wasn't working the same thing all the time. There's always something different. You learn at night how to spot stuff at night, what to do at night.
So then there were people who were actually working, not just the security police roaming around. There were people who were actually up and working
right.
when these raids took place. And so did they, and besides that barber, were any people killed during any of the raids?
On some of the bases there was, not on all of them, but a lot of the bases had people that got killed on them. Like you had planes coming in at night where they'd been out on mission during the day and they wouldn't make it back till night because they had to go so far. So you had to have people working on a flight line to spot the planes parking and start filling them again or loading them again or whatever needed to be done. There was people doing it all the day long.
Mm-hmm. So basically kind of just like a normal airport where the lights are just coming in all the time. Okay. Let me see what else. Did you, what was the most heroic thing that you saw happen while you were there?
I wasn't there when it actually took part, but I seen it when it was coming to an end, that the aircraft would go in and pick up a lot of the Vietnamese people and bring them back to the base out of their harm's way. When they was going in and being attacked and all, they would pick up a bunch of them and bring them back into a safe area. So you seen that a lot.
And how about, did you receive any medals or commendations?
I received 3 different medals
while you were there.
I got the Vietnam Service Medal, which had 2 clusters on it, 2 Service Bronze Star clusters. I had the National Defense Medal, Service Medal, and also received the Republic of Vietnam Campaign Medal. Which everybody was getting those 3 medals, if they even served in Vietnam. Everybody got those kind of medals. But the ones, some of them had different amount, clusters on them. Like I said, I wasn't over but a year. Some of the rest of them had been over in 2 and 3 tours. But mine was just a year tour.
Mm-hmm. And did you get out of the military when you got home? Was your time up, or
time
did you still have
up.
Time left? Or
I come back and went to Charleston, South Carolina, and started working on the what was it? The big airplane that the Air Force had at that time, Globemasters, and. While I was there, mm-hmm. I took 2 R&R, well, not R&R, but I can't think what they were right this minute. Anyway, I went to Athens, Greece on a tour for 3 months, and I went to Ketchikawa, Japan for 3 months. Was doing the same kind of work that I was doing all the time, but you just had an opportunity to go and see different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. So were you kind of expecting to be sent back to Vietnam at any point? Did you think you would be?
It was a possibility that they could send you back at any time. But at the time of my reenlistment and all, they had too many people that had joined when they had the big Vietnam buildup, and they had to let a bunch of us out. So I had to get out. Mm-hmm. But after I got out, I went back into the Air National Guard and served another tour in there. And that's where I switched over to be a security police while I was in the Air National Guard.
Oh, okay.
And that's where
I didn't know that.
A weapon I towed to Dan when I worked. I had 2 of them.
Okay. Well, so when you came back, did they give you, like, how much notice did they give you? Oh, you're going home. Did they, you know, tell you the day before? Did they tell you a week?
It was probably
how did all that work?
A week to 2 weeks before you come back, you would get orders that you was going back home and to this base or that base or wherever they were sending you to. And then probably about 3 to 4 days before you did leave, you had to pack up everything that you had except for a uniform and or 2 to take with you to travel in. And everything else was shipped back to your new base.
And did the people, the group of people that you went over there with initially, did they all come back at, did you all come back at the same time, or is it just each individual person,
everybody's
their orders are
different?
I
mean, everybody went over at a different time. Like, when I went in, I met a bunch of guys from all around Alabama. And we all stayed together. Well, there's some from New York and Michigan and a couple other places. But we all stayed together while we went through basic training, when we went to tech school. And then when we went to Vietnam, we went different ways. But when we came back, I run into a bunch of them at the base I was on. Then when I went on a TDY, that's what those 2 tours were, the Japan and the, Greece, was TDY. I got over to Greece, and I met a bunch of them over there that I've been in the service with. When I went to Japan, I met a bunch of them more, different ones that I had been in the service with. We went through basic and all together. So I thought that was pretty good that you got to see some of the people that you trained with and served with at different places, at different times.
Yeah. Well, so did you come straight home from Vietnam, or did they take you somewhere before you actually came back to the States to kind of debrief
when I came
or
back,
whatever?
We got to take a leave of absence for a couple weeks before we went to our next base.
But you did come straight from you flew like from Vietnam back to the States.
No.
You didn't go back through the Philippines or anything like that. It's just straight home. And so, you know, what I've seen with Desert Storm and with, you know, like people going to Iraq is there's, you know, tons of people at the airports when people leave and people there when they come back and all kinds of celebrations and stuff. What was it like when you got back?
It was pretty exciting to see the family and all when I got back. They were all at the airport when I got there. Whenever I left, they were all at the airport when I left. They even went. I left out of South Carolina whenever I went overseas first time. And they took me up to South Carolina and stayed with me the night before I left. So it was, that was good. I enjoyed that. And the same way, when I come back home, I flew right into Montgomery, but they met me at the airport and all.
And did you have any personal experiences, like with any protesters or anything?
Not with protesters or anything. I mean, it's like you said before, whenever you go into these airports and all, you'd see people from all over the place going, all branches of the service. They may be going to basic training. They may be going overseas. They may be coming back from overseas, or are they going somewhere else? They just continuously, all the time. Anytime you go to an airport, you're going to see them. Even now, you still see a bunch of them. They're like with the Desert Storm people, when they come back in, they were flew right into a base to be debriefed and all this. But a lot of them didn't even live around the bases where they were stationed at. They lived different parts, so they'd fly back home. And so you see a lot of that going on still today.
So you didn't feel any of the animosity when you got back home that I guess maybe later on some of the people
not really
experienced.
I mean, the VA, when a lot of these people from Desert Storm and all got back, they got a lot of different benefits and all from the VA and all. The ones that were serving in Vietnam, they didn't get nothing out of it. They didn't get no kind of recognition like all these other ones do, which that was sort of upsetting to me. That we did the same job they were doing, just a different part of the world, but you didn't really get no recognition for it. But I reckon that's because it was a political war. And that's what changed everybody's attitude.
So that kind of
what they thought about it and all this.
Well, so if you had it to do all over again, would you do things the same way? Do you think you would still go?
I don't really know. I mean, I've thought about it some, and even when I got in the Air National Guard, I thought about, well, if they go back to Vietnam, would I go with them, or would I try to get out, or what I would do? I just never could make a decision on that. I mean, I like the service and all. I like the people in the service, meeting different people, going different places. But as far as going in just because of a war, I don't know. Right now, I'm too old to do that anyway, so. Right.
You don't have to worry about
they
it at this
somebody
point,
young
right?
And healthy now, not sick and old. We Well, you sure have no ideas because you flew over to Germany to see your sister and how it was on the planes and all going over there and coming back in different parts of the country and all. How everything's different everywhere you go. I mean, it's not the same one place to the next. It's not going to be the same. It's going to be different. Different people, different styles of food. Everything is different.
So ultimately, you think that looking back, you think maybe they should have tried to have handled Vietnam in a different way?
It could have been handled different, but I don't know how. I mean, people that was in charge and all that, I mean, like I said, it was more political for political game for people to keep you over there fighting than it was to let you be home in a peaceful attitude. I mean, world, but it ain't peaceful nowhere now. I mean, it's rough anywhere you go.
Right. Well, do you think that the soldiers who were over there fighting, do you think that they realized, or when do you think maybe they realized that it was kind of a bad fight that they were in? Do you think that they realized that those Vietnamese people were gonna, that it really mattered to them that they won and they weren't really gonna give up?
I think that was more the people that was out in the jungles and all fighting, that was meeting the people on a one-on-one basis. They all had different attitudes about our different, whatever you want to call it, about the people over there and what was going on. They seen them more than I did on a base because they were traveling all through the jungles and all.
And you think that they figured it out, though? Do you think they figured it out pretty early on how tough a fight it was going to be?
Or how long it took them to figure it out, but I know they figured it out at one time or another that it was more political than it was anything else. A lot of them, they was out in the jungles for 4 or 5 months at a time. I mean, they wasn't just out there for a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
They were out there for a while. They was living in the jungles. In Vietnam, the Vietnamese had caves and tunnels and all that they was all in. They could pop up here and be gone and you wouldn't know where they was at. And they finally found all these tunnels and all where they'd been crawling through them and going from place to place and had ammunition and all stored in them, and hand grenades, any kind of bombs. They had them stored in them. And they were finding all this at first when they first went over there. And I said, they probably didn't really think about it at first, but later on, they were figuring out, well, this is more political than it is anything else. We upsetting their lifestyle.
So would you guys who were there on the base, would you ever sit around and talk about this kind of stuff, or did it just kind of come up here and there, you know?
Sometimes we'd have a lot of discussions about it, and what do you think about it, and this kind of stuff. Are you really go home? You think we need to go home? We need to get out? This kind of stuff all the time. I mean, with the turnover mm-hmm. was going on. Different people coming in and going out, been there and been there and come here and going there. So you always seen different things while you were there.
Mm-hmm. And were most people there for a year like you were, or did it just vary?
For a year. And then after that, my phone is going off. Hold on a minute. I'm going to stop.
Okay.
something. Yeah. Oh yeah.
About you said when you went over there for the first time, you went for a year.
And then a bunch of them wanted to stay for another tour. Uh-huh. A lot of times they let them stay, but a lot of them come back as soon as they could.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to go.
But you were ready to go,
I was
huh?
missing home too much. I lived at home all my life just about till I got in the service, and then that was my first time being away from home, being away from people I knew. It was a whole different atmosphere, attitude, and everything. And then when you come back, you go back in the same thing and start learning. Learn all this stuff that you didn't even think about it while you was at home, but now you think about all this stuff, and then you start seeing all this stuff going on TV about the war and all. Like when I first come back, I was sitting on the couch in the living room watching TV, and we live close by where gasoline storage tanks and all were. And these trucks and all going up and down the road, a lot of times they would backfire. And I'd hit the floor. I think there's a bomb going off somewhere.
Yeah.
I had to get that out of my system. But when I first got home, that was going on a lot.
And I'm guessing that at that time, they really weren't offering up a lot of treatment for that kind of thing. I mean, they weren't. Not counseling or anything like that. That really wasn't going on very much then, was it? So how long did it take for that to kind of
It probably took
ease
me
up, I guess.
2 to 3 weeks to get that out of my system and realize that I'm not in the war zone no more. I'm at home. And this is just something going on outside. It's not a bomb or nothing like that. But it took me a little while to get it out of my system. Some of the rest of them had been out in the jungles and all. They were having a lot of depression, worrying about all this stuff. It was driving them crazy. And there's still a lot of them that's affected from it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And does any of it, do you ever have any responses to anything like that now since it's been so long, or did that all pretty much?
I think it's pretty well stopped.
Stopped completely.
Every once in a while, I might have a little dream about something that happened over there just a flash memory, and then it's gone. But that's all it is a memory. And then a lot of times you'd be sitting around and you see something on a movie or something about Vietnam. Well, I remember some of that kind of stuff happening. I've seen some of this kind of stuff that they brought in, like the booby traps and all that they had. They were all kind of bringing some of those back in to the base to show you what they were. Yeah. You see it in the movie, but I know what that is.
Yeah.
So it's still... Every once in a while, something will come up that you'll remember something about Vietnam. Yes.
So it'll stay with you forever.
To totally ignore what went on or what was happening or what you're singing over there or nothing like that, it's always going to be a memory. It might not pop up every time, but it's going to pop up every once in a while.
And does it bother you? How do you think the government is doing taking care of vets now? I mean, how do you think they did taking care of vets then? How do you think they're doing now? Do you think there's been any improvement?
Vets or the other vets?
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about how they took care of them?
They're learning a whole lot.
And how do you feel like
now,
they're taking care of the vets now? Like
at the end of the Vietnam War. They're seeing all this stuff that's coming out of when people were in Vietnam. psychiatrists and all are seeing it. Doctors are seeing different stuff coming out of Vietnam now that happened over there that they didn't know nothing about, like the Asian orange. And so a lot of diseases and all around that's coming out now that they didn't know about.
So you think they're doing a better job now than they did?
I'm putting it that way.
For you guys.
Still learning about it. They don't know everything yet.
Well, that's an honest answer.
I mean, everybody's different. Everybody affects everybody different. So, I mean, it's just like to say, no one person is the same as another one. Everybody's different. And same way.
Right.
Veterans and all coming back from different wars and all, it affects everybody different.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think, is there anything else that you can think of that you think I need to know? That you want me to know about what you saw or experienced
really
while you were there?
This is the first time I've even thought about Vietnam since I was over there.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad I got to talk to you about it, and I know that Texas Tech will appreciate it. And I just want to tell you thank you for doing what you did, and thanks for sharing it with us. All right.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Talk to you later. All right, bye.
Okay, bye.